Welcome to episode 8 of the Discovery Files. We're going to return back to Invincible for this one, and we're going to interview Aaron Meggis today.
So, Aaron, why don't you give us an intro on what your experience was like during this time?
I started with Goldfields as a graduate. I came over from Melbourne and sort of started underground, actually, and I sort of got really into the sort of production environment. That was in 2011, and as part of the graduate rotations, sort of a year later or at the start of 2012, moved to exploration. I remember thinking I didn't really want to do that, actually, because I quite liked the production environment, and I'd heard, you know, oh, these exploration guys, they just drink coffee all day, and like I quite like the fast paced sort of going underground and all that sort of stuff. But then I moved across, and then I started working with some really great people. So I think I started with Phil Brown, and if you remember him, Ghanaian Geo, and he was great and sort of took me under his wing. And so I worked with him for a bit, and on a few different projects. And I think I did some air call with Jen, and then I think eventually, I think shortly after I started, Aisha and Sean joined Goldfields, and then I started working with Aisha a bit, and then sort of things just took off from there, I think, with the whole Invincible thing. So it sort of, it all happened really fast, but I remember it being a really exciting time. And I, by any means, you know, as a graduate, sort of wasn't too involved in any of the big things. It was sort of mostly logging core and helping out where I could, I remember it being really exciting. And I think it's like, looking back on it, actually shortly after I left Goldfield, sort of a few years later, I was still trying to chase the high of that time, that sort of discovery. It was, yeah, it was great.
That feeling, I don't know. I just remember, you know, like it was obviously, it was hard, but it was also so exciting to just show up at work and be like, oh, what's today going to hold? And I don't know, I've had the same experience where it's been, you know, I've been involved in a few smaller discoveries, nothing like that since then, but it's, I don't think I've recaptured that feeling in any of those, you know. And it's like, I had one small team that worked for me before I came to my current company, and it was like, they were really motivated and they were really good geos and I enjoyed them, but it's just, it wasn't that same, I don't know what it was, the essence of it all, right?
yeah, for sure. It was funny, I think, years later, when I was in an interview, and I think I remember, you know, saying, you know, I was part of the Invincible Discovery team, and I probably didn't appreciate how, you know, big of a thing it actually is, and the guy that had sort of had, you know, been in exploration his entire life and never really made a significant discovery. It's like, oh, you know, not everybody discovers, you know, big gold mines and this sort of, I was like, oh, maybe I've said the wrong thing. yeah, it's, I don't know, it's funny. Yeah, you talk to certain people and it is, it's a big thing. Like it's, yeah.
Aaron, one question I had is, I mean, this was very early on in your career. Can you comment on, like, what were things that, you know, like, I mean, I find it interesting that you were in the production environment, right? So you already kind of had, I guess, some of the aspects of what needs to occur to get to kind of like an economic kind of outcome. And so can you talk a little bit about, I mean, like, what were some of the things that stood out when you came to exploration, like, say, pre and post kind of discovery? Was it just the scale? Was it, you know, like, were there other things that you saw that started happening that weren't quite happening in the team before?
I think for me, so where I started, it was at a mine sort of off the main Sunrise camp called Cave Rocks, and it was sort of a small underground mine, it was a visual ore body, I guess, but the gold is sort of associated with arsenic pyrite, and it wasn't visible. It was it was that kind of deposit. But once Invincible core started coming out, and you know, it was very different, right? And it was you know, there was visible gold, and I just remember thinking, oh wow, this is this is awesome. Like, I think the first time you see visible gold in core, and that was it for me. That was at Invincible.
So one of the things I was going to ask is I've talked to so many people over the years where they either work production or they work exploration, and so few jump in between those. And actually, like, to the point where, like, I'd been working in a production role before coming to St. Ives, and I'd done that for, like, I think 2 years. And I remember talking to, like, different exploration companies in the U.S. trying to get a job back in exploration. And they're like, oh, no, you've been doing production for too long. Did you have any sort of pushback about jumping into the exploration team straight out of production?
Not really. And I think that's something Goldfields does really well is their graduate program was excellent. Like, they really sort of stressed people rotating and getting experience in both production and exploration and really sort of setting you up, you know, so even if you do, move on shortly after just unfortunately because of the way St. Ives was, like, that did happen more often than not, but, you were set up basically wherever you went, you sort of had more skills than most of the sort of the early career guys out there, I would say. I think that's something Goldfields did really well. But for me personally, it's one of the reasons I stayed in exploration, really, is just, yeah, continuing on from that. And like, I didn't really want to go back to production after sort of that high from Invincible. I'm still here.
Yeah. So you see how it worked elsewhere before, or had you had some experience before coming to Goldfields?
No. The only sort of semi-relevant experience was during my honours project. It was with a small gold project in Victoria, Woods Point.
Mm-hmm.
But that was, I wouldn't call that really sort of mine site experience or anything. It was writing a thesis, so it was more research based than.
And so now that you think about, I guess, that experience of going through a graduate program, I mean, yeah, like in some ways you kind of hit the lottery, right? You went through a graduate program and you ended up working on a project about something. The only thing kind of missing is, like, you become a production geologist when a new mine's being built or something like that, right? So you go through that same kind of learning process. I mean, now that you look back at that kind of time, and since you've been in subsequent organizations, do you think that how do you think about your time as a graduate in a company like Goldfields, which allowed you to develop in that way, compared to, say, getting that same experience in another organization that maybe didn't have such a formalized kind of graduate program?
Yeah, I think it was really beneficial. And actually, there was a funny comment Nick Holland, who was the CEO at the time, made at the Sydney Mining Club. I just happened to attend sort of much later in my career, and he sort of was quite proud of the fact that he felt that they had such a good sort of graduate program that they'd trained, half the industry. But it was the way he said it. He's like, I feel like we've trained half the industry just because of, the people that have come through at the right time and gotten, all the skills that that were, being taught through the graduate program. I think it was really beneficial, and it's definitely set me up, for the rest of my career. In hindsight, it would have been great, as you said, it would have been great to sort of see it all the way through to production and maybe sort of get that experience at that time. But, it doesn't always work out that way, I guess.
But I mean, it's right, because Scott, like, you correct me if I'm wrong, I mean, we've had so many conversations I've forgotten half of them. You started with smaller companies, didn't you? You didn't go through, like, any formalized kind of graduate program, did you?
No, I started with a couple little juniors, and I actually remember my first job out of school. I took a pay cut. I was working at FedEx loading trucks, and I took a pay cut to make my first geology job. And my boss was a mining engineer, and he was the COO because it was a small company. And he's like, go and talk to the surveyor and he'll tell you about the geology. And I go and I stood there, and he was like using a theodolite, and he's, writing down stuff, and he's just completely ignoring me. And I was like, so I have a question. And he's like, what the F do you want, schoolboy? And I was like, I have to learn from this guy? And I ended up becoming good friends with him, so it worked out well. But it was... it was really eye-opening because St. Ives was the first company I'd worked at that had a graduate program up to that point. And it was kind of shocking how much better prepared the young geos were than what I was at the same time in my career early on. So it was, with that said, I also learned maybe different skill sets that helped me as well, but I don't know if everybody would thrive in that environment or not.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's where, like, that's what I'm kind of trying to get to, the point I was trying to get across is that, you know, like, it for that time that the discovery of Invincible was actually done probably by the right company at the right time in that sense that, you know, like it, like you said, Aaron, like you kind of trained half the industry, right? So you had all of these, I mean, you guys had a pretty big team at Invincible. So you kind of trained a lot of people, not just from the fact that they were being trained as graduates, like, you know, to understand the whole kind of industry, but also in training and like how, what's the, I guess, the right way to kind of take a discovery through its line as well, considering that, yeah, Invincible took what was like 3 years, like less than 3 years to go from discovery to kind of in operation. Yeah, so that would have been a pretty interesting learning curve.
Yeah, and I think you touched on one of the other podcasts, but the recruitment team, I think, did a really, really, really good job. And, you know, the fact that, you know, we had guys of really with really diverse backgrounds. And I distinctly remember when I was being interviewed, they really focused on work. I mean, I didn't have any sort of relevant experience, but they sort of focused on work that I'd done in, you know, I worked for, you know, a family business. It was a fish shop, and, you know, he really focused on that. He's like, okay, so you're, you know, getting up early, you know, dealing with fish guts, you know, this sort of stuff. I was like, yeah, pretty much, you know, you get all the crappy jobs. He's like, you'll probably do all right. So, you know, like I wonder.
Let's get this kid out to the air core rig on the salt lake. He's just perfect for that.
Yeah.
He's going to think like salt guts at 4 a.m. are sitting on the air core rig on the salt lake at 5 a.m. is probably like a walk in the park compared to handling fish guts at the same time. That's perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's actually something we don't touch on enough in the industry. Is I've talked to so many people over the years who their previous experience pre-geology is discounted completely. And I've talked to people who were like, you know, drill helpers and people who were surveyors and laborers and waiters and waitresses. And all of those jobs made them a different geologist than they would have been. And it's almost like we just ignore, you know, you had to deal with a really horrible job dealing with fish guts all the time, right? It's like, and that's going to make you look at your subsequent work in a totally different way, right?
Yeah, for sure. And I think Steve maybe mentioned as well in his talk, but you know, there was I think fieldies that went on to become geos, and I think that experience, I think that's actually something they sort of, that Goldfields did really well in the graduate program, is you started at the bottom, and you spent time with the fieldies, you spent time with the truck drivers, you spent time with you know, all parts of the operation, so that you understood, you know, what was what, basically. So I think that was something they did really well. And
and I think that's an important point to kind of, like, you know, stay on, in that one of the things that I often find is, like, you know, people say that there's a cost to, like, running these graduate programs. And yeah, there is an organizational cost to it, right? There's an HR cost. There's a cost of recruiting all of these kids. And then, you know, that, you know, 50% of that cohort may not stay. So you're kind of training people and then pushing them out and training them on your dollar compared to someone else's dollar. But I think one of the things that people forget about it is that, like I joined a company, like a mid-tier company. And the thing that I realize is that you get to see a lot of other facets of the business as outside of just your work domain or your work department. And I think that's what the value of a lot of these graduate programs is, right? That, yeah, like you get to see that, like the mining environment, like, you know, like all the cogs that have to sit in the mining environment and how they all have to kind of work in a way so the machine works. The same in like, you know, large exploration programs, you know, like St. Ives was a really large kind of brownfields exploration program. So, yeah, so you get to see like, what does it take to spend $20-30 million a year exploring? You know, like, why do you need people like the Steves to be just as good at their job as, you know, like the seniors like Scott or someone like that needs to be at their job? And yeah, and I think that's the value that I don't think people quite understand about what these graduate programs provide.
Yeah, for sure.
I think they're very easy to say they're going to, you know, start doing something like this. But what often happens is the pressures of the real world come up and then they go, oh, you know, you're in the exploration team, we're really slammed. And so you're going to stay in the exploration team or vice versa. You might be in production or whatever else, environmental or anything. And so then they get so busy that they don't move them on. And I think you really lose something from that. I think the discipline of saying 6 months, I think it was 6 months, and then you're moving on to the next job is kind of, you know, key to that, right?
So Aaron, can you talk a little bit about, I mean, one of the things that we've asked people in this like series of conversations about Invincible is how they viewed the team at the organizational level they were at. You know, like we had Julian, you know, who gave a completely different perspective at the top of the pyramid. You know, like we had Aisha, who, you know, like really started at, I guess, the bottom of the pyramid, but, you know, like along the way she kind of rose a little bit in prominence where she was doing work with different affiliates. Yeah, so can you talk a little bit about what your like impressions of the team were? Like how did you find the team dynamics? How did you figure out the organizational pressure? How did you feel like, you know, like your specific job pressure on how you had to deliver all of those things? Can you just like riff a little bit about what were some of your impressions at that time?
Yeah, I think Aisha actually summed it up really well, but like all the way from Malcolm at the top sort of letting us do what we needed to do, Julian, you know, organizing everything exceptionally well, and you know, I've spoken to this about or to other people, his leadership really, I think, made it happen in the time frame that it did happen. Like it takes, I think, certain people to do that, and you know, you might not make a lot of friends, but I think he did an exceptional job, and I've got a lot of respect for him. And in fact, you know, I still see him, you know, at conferences and stuff now, and we get on really well. And but for me, like, I was sort of working probably more closely with Aisha, and she was fantastic. Lots of patience, and yeah, really showed me so much stuff that, you know, I think we probably weren't actually, you know, too dissimilar in terms of experience, but I think she was a lot more mature and probably just knew a lot more than me actually in general at that time. And so, yeah, I learned a heap from her, and I think she really tried to get me involved, and I think I hope I helped actually with a lot of the sort of the day to day stuff, which allowed her to, I guess, do some of the more technical project work.
It's certainly not as glorious being at the core farm in the sun with that janky little shade thing on wheels, you know, to keep you from cooking alive, but I mean, you must have logged, because you logged core, you logged RC, you did all sorts of stuff, right?
Yeah, all sorts of stuff. And actually, so a couple claims to fame, I guess, in my time at Goldfields. So one of them was, I remember Aisha saying, and it was, she sort of came to me with sort of some urgency, and she's like, okay, I forget if it was the engineers or someone, one of the other departments, they're like, okay, they want to put the waste dump on Invincible South, basically. We need to get this, like, Supergene wireframe out as soon as possible to make, you know, to show them that there's actually gold here. Like, let's not put infrastructure on it. So, yeah, that was something that sort of, and I think I remember saying, yeah, sure, what's a wireframe? And so she's like, quickly had to show me how to wireframe, basically. And I think I only did the lines at that stage, and then she sort of whipped up the rest and like, okay, there's something here. Let's move that waste dump somewhere else. And then the other one was, I can't remember at what point in time it was, but I think it was after sort of the sort of Invincible results started coming in. They're like, okay, let's spend a bit of time looking at the rest of the lake, right? And so there was this massive, I think it was 300 hole lake air core program, for the other side of the lake. And yeah, so I was kind of nominated to do that one, and that was in the middle of winter. And I think yeah, the others have sort of spoken about the challenges of the Salt Lake, but yeah, that was really character building.
What was the worst experience you had on the Salt Lake?
I think it was middle of winter, and we just had a heap of rain. I think I was waist deep in salt, like hypersaline water, or you know, salty water. And I think I had about 10 layers on, and the wind chill like across the lake was cutting through me like nothing else. I don't know, I've never been that cold in my life. Yeah, it was just, you know, and this was, I think it was, I don't know, probably 7 o'clock in the morning. I was like, oh man, it's gonna be a long day.
At least the water was salty, so it, you know, dropped the freezing temperature a little bit, right?
Yeah, that's so it just stays wet instead of frozen. Yeah, I mean Aaron, the other question, I guess, yeah, like we asked this to Aisha as well, how do you as an individual deal with the fact that, you know, like you probably didn't sign up for all of the stuff that you probably got asked to do when the Invincible Discovery happened? Like, you know, like I'm not sure that was part of your or formalized part of your kind of training plan as part of the graduate program that you were with. You know, so how did you personally deal with it? Did you find it overwhelming? Did you feel that you were able to face it? Was the support network there? Like, how did you find it? Were there any like, oh shit, moments where you're like, you know, I really don't know how the hell to do this, but you know, like there's a lot of counting on this, a lot of people are counting on this product.
Yeah, look,
how
did you go? There was plenty of those moments, but no, the support I think was always really good. And I think the other thing is, I guess going back to, so like in the 12 months before I started at Goldfields, there was no jobs, and that's sort of one of the reasons I did my honours, just to sort of, yeah, keep doing something. And so yeah, but like when I actually got the offer, I was so excited, and I was just, you know, I was willing to do, you know, absolutely anything basically. So it's yeah, and I think it's the site as well, a little bit about the site as well, because you've got, you know, you rock up every day and there's this big hungry mill, you know, that needs constant feeding, and it's sort of it's just a constant reminder of, okay, like we've got to keep finding stuff, we've got to keep, you know, getting all through it. And so really, and yeah, talking to Malcolm about this, I guess as well, again, sort of after I left, is like, that's one thing that, you know, a lot of the Perth based or wherever the head office is, those exploration teams, I think, don't feel that same pressure. And maybe
you definitely know you're singing for your supper.
You know, like what you, that's what I mean. I think about, like, you know, these kind of like large programs, is that you feel, you get a much better sense of what the business kind of needs. Like,
yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Like in a lot of ways. I remember, again, you know, like just as an aside, like it's exactly the same story, right? Like I remember when I first started, you know, we were part of a large brownfields program, and this is like within my first week or something, like, I think it's like first week, second week, we had this like big powwow about what the aim of the like the program is, and the guy who was giving the talk, it's a guy named Jim Klusky, who still works for BHP now, but yeah, like he stood up and the first thing he said, he's like, now listen, this is the type of ore that we are mining right now. Then there's all these deposits that are development projects. They're all crap. So you guys are here to make sure that we don't have to mine this shit, right? So, and that was it. And we were like, cool, got it. Like, yeah, like we gotta find better stuff than the shit that we already have in the inventory. Got it. Right. Yeah, and that was it. He's like, any questions? And we were like,
I think that's like one of the things I took from that Exploration Radio interview on Craystar was, it's not necessarily that like Craystar wasn't a failure. It actually succeeded, because the whole goal was, is there a better mine out there than this one? And yeah. And I think that's like often a question that we need to be asking on these brownfields projects is, can we find better mill feed than what we currently have? And sometimes they turn into something really big, and sometimes they just feed the mill for a little bit, you know?
That's right. Yeah. And I think that's like the whole of business approach. And, you know, like one of the things that I feel that, you know, not a lot of companies probably do that, that's the type of systematic graduate programs that, that were probably popular. I mean, Aaron, when did you go through, like 10, 15 years ago? Like would have been 2011, something like that?
Yeah, 2010, yeah, 2011. Right. Yeah.
So it's not a long time ago, right? Like, and so I feel like we've kind of like regressed, like be like far from knowing what the value of a lot of these programs were, just because from an HR point of view, and I get it, it costs a lot of money and it's an easy thing to cut out of the business when it comes down to, but, you know, like I always feel like, you know, like on one hand, we complain about people not being very educated about the industry, but then on the other hand, nobody does anything to educate people about the industry. So, you know, like what's the, like, you know, what's the kind of the right measure there?
Yeah. Aaron, one of the things I was going to ask you is, so you were production geo at Cave Rocks. And if I remember right, Cave Rocks was fairly discontinuous ore and challenging to mine.
Yeah.
When you first looked at Invincible, did you have like flashbacks to Cave Rocks?
No, I don't think so, because it was so different. Like the host rocks were so different, and mineralization was different, and I think the grades actually were not too bad at Cave Rocks, but it was always that, you know, one more year sort of mine. I don't remember it being like that. I think it was, the Invincible was quite different.
So now when you think about your time there, and what would you do differently in that time? Like, is there something that stands out? Like I don't want to say regret, but yeah, like something that you think you felt you could have done differently? I mean, it's hard to say that things went badly on a project that goes from discovery to mine in 36 months.
That's right. I think going back and sort of knowing where I am now, yeah, that point you made about sort of seeing it through all the way to production, that would probably be my biggest regret, I guess. Sort of getting that experience at that time and over, you know, across one sort of significant deposit. But otherwise, I think, you know, it was so, you know, the day-to-day work was so varied that you learned so much. So it was, it was hard to kind of get distracted almost because you were too busy, I guess, and doing different things. And it was always pretty interesting.
I mean, what is something that you like, you know, what's a lesson you would give your younger self like now, like, you know, through the advantage of wisdom that you have now collected over the rest of the years, like what's something that you feel like you could tell your younger self about?
I guess maybe a couple of things. I would probably tell myself to sort of appreciate sort of the moment a little bit more, and you know, as I said, it is sort of a pretty significant thing, and I may not discover anything that big again, right? So it's you know, that it was a high at the time, but it was all kind of rushed. So I guess, you know, you got to take a moment to sort of appreciate what it is. And how significant it is.
Like the being in the moment, I think, is an interesting one, because it's a regret I think a lot of people have through that time. And I wonder, you know, like this is what one of the things that I think, Scott, you and I have talked about discoveries, right? In that, like in hindsight, it's be interesting to ask you. And in hindsight, it seems like the steps to the discovery of Invincible were all logical. Right. But when you think about what you were doing at that time, like I don't think they were that logical, right? I think you had a smorgasbord of options or decisions in front of you, and you had to pick one. And then, like in hindsight, you go, of course, that was the right decision to make. But you know, like looking forward, you go, I don't know whether it was the right decision to make or not. So this staying in the moment kind of aspect, I think, is challenging because, yeah, like you have like such a like a high level of kind of uncertainty about whether you're making the right decisions or not, or self doubt the conflicted nature like in your head, like, you know, the voices in your head kind of. And so like I don't know, do you think I'm right in that sense? Like, yeah, like I've often felt like, you know, like certain moments I go, man, you know, I wish I'd appreciated how well we did in that moment. But then I also think about it and go, well, what did I feel in that moment? Well, I felt a lot of anxiety and panic usually and indecision. So I'm not sure I really wanted to enjoy that moment that much. Maybe that's why I moved through it pretty quickly.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Yeah.
It's like the benefit of hindsight, right? Like in hindsight, I think because things worked out, you go, oh, well, of course I should have taken the time to, smoke a proverbial cigar at that time because I it was such a good moment. But I also think that, there was undoubtedly a level of stress in that moment as well that you kind of probably blank out of your mind to some degree.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. And we were super busy. Like everyone was really busy. So you get caught up in it and it is, it's hard.
And I think too, you had just come from that program with Philip, which, and I won't mention the name of it, but it looked really promising. And there was a bit of an RC rig preserved for a bit there with a couple rigs turning and then it kind of fell over. And so I think sometimes you get into these moments of excitement and you go, is it real? Is it just going to fall over like that one did?
Yeah, absolutely. And like I experienced that with the sort of the AirCore program that I was doing, or the Lake AirCore program that I was doing on the other side, you know, and there was some not bad hits from that. And, you know, the first thing you think of is, oh, is it the next, Invincible, right? But that's not always the case.
Reflecting on one of the questions you asked earlier, early in my career, like I just happened to, like the first company I worked at had a discovery, and then the next company I worked at had a discovery, and then I did production, and then I came to St. Ives and we had a discovery. So I was like, oh man, this is what you do. And it's like, and so I totally wasn't in the moment because I just kind of thought it was somewhat normal, and it was like increasing sizes of discovery. So I was like, oh, this is really exciting. What's the rest of my career going to be like? And I don't know. I was thinking about that where some people's experiences, like you talked about earlier, Aaron, where it's like the exact opposite, where they've never been involved in a big discovery and there's almost some animosity there sometimes, you know, and it's purely luck, right? Like, it's not like I was like, oh, I'm going to go to this company because they're going to make a discovery, right? You always hope to.
Right, and I think, there's plenty of, brilliant geos out there that do, fantastic work.
So Aaron, I was going to ask you, one of my favorite experiences at St. Ives was when we did the awards ceremony at the end of the year.
Yeah.
I of course won the sterilization award, which was I drove the program without a single above detection limit hit. But what award did you win again? Because I think you got something pretty cool, right?
I got a couple. There was one year, I think I got, it was like most meters logged maybe. There was, I forget how much it was. It was a lot. And there was also, I think because they felt sorry for me for putting me on that 300 hole Lake AirCore program, they sort of named that award after something, I forget what it was. Yeah, but they sort of gave me that award, or they made that award just for me.
It's like the misery award.
Yeah, it's basically.
Yeah,
it was good. It was
that's brilliant. Yeah. I mean, it's good. Like I think this is one of the things that stands out to me. Like I wasn't part of that team, but I think that like the way that the team dynamics kind of worked and fostered, I think that seems to be like a key in how the team got to the result that they did.
Yeah, and it's something I think, like having moved to Sydney now, and there's really not a very big sort of geological community here, and it's something I look back on and sort of talk about it with my partner now, and that time that we spent in the goldfields was great for a number of reasons, but Invincible was one of them. But just the friends that we made and the community that a lot of people talk about it, but the community that sort of the goldfields, sort of creates, like you just, everyone's quite close and you're sort of catching up with people quite often, and it makes it really easy, right? Because people are coming from all over the world, I guess, so it makes sort of moving out there yeah, a lot easier.
It was like, I think when I came out to interview, it was this like whirlwind where, you know, like I didn't have hardly any days of vacation, like my other job. And so I like left, flew to Australia, did this interview. But Julian took us to Kezia's house, had a big party going on. It was all the geos there. And I just remember like meeting, like it felt like 100 people that I couldn't remember anybody's name. I couldn't even remember who threw the party. And they were all geologists and they were all like delighted to talk about geology. And I think about that. And I'm like, what a cool experience to have so many people around that were so passionate about geology and that where they would actually like to hang out on the, you know, their time away from work, as opposed to like not wanting to set eyes on anybody that you work with.
Yeah. That was a lot of fun, actually.
Yeah. How have you, because now you're a principal geo, how have you taken some of these lessons to like doing your own teams since then? Just kind of curious.
Yeah, I think for me the big one was sort of, you know, and working with people like Aisha and Julian was, I always sort of make sure there's that someone above me that I can really you know, learn from and you know, bounce ideas off of, and you know, I think I've had that sort of every step of the way, and I don't sort of move unless, you know, that person is there. And then in terms of sort of making teams and sort of managing teams, that's been a bit of a learning process. I don't think I really appreciated how hard it was, you know, when I was at Goldfields. And that's, again, like, I've got so much respect for Julian, because it was a big team, you know, with so many different projects. And then, yeah, obviously the craziness of Invincible. So, yeah, that's something I've sort of, had to develop, I guess, along the way. And, I do try and sort of draw back on that time and, okay, you know, what were people like to me? And, I just ever remember everyone sort of, or, you know, those more senior people being really calm and respectful and, you know, honest and just, you know, they're the kind of values that you want in a leader, I think, in, you know, especially in our industry. And, you know, you want to learn as much as possible and yeah, have a good time at the same time, I guess.
Yeah, I was thinking about with Steve's interview, he was talking about Malcolm would always make that drawing on his whiteboard and he would, you know, draw whatever story. But, and you mentioned as well, like, so you were an expiration or right out of the graduate program, and you would still have conversations with the MRM manager. I think that's huge, yeah. Right? Where you look at the, I don't know, the egalitarianism of that, even though, like, you know, South Africa is known for this very stratified hierarchy of leadership. Malcolm made time for everybody, yeah, right?
Absolutely. And even, yeah, as I said, sort of the couple of conferences that I've bumped into him, you know, after I left, yeah, we had some fantastic chats. He did. He just, yeah, again, like going back to what you guys were saying, it was just, I think, the right group of people at the right time, you know, made it all work.
I guess to ask the hard question, how do you build a group of people to do that again, right? So this isn't a one-off. How do you make this happen again? Like, you know, Ahmad and I were talking about, you know, maybe it's more like Oasis, right before Oasis got back together, by the way. That was a fantastic call, Ahmad. but how do you get the band back together, right? Or a band together, maybe.
Yeah, look, I don't know. That's really tough. That's yeah, I don't know. I don't know how to answer that.
I mean, I think one of the things that we kind of talk about is, like, you know, it's all these, sometimes it's all these little small things that matter, right? Like, again, you know, like the way the team operated, you know, like the way you kind of build you know, like the togetherness in the team, you know, like the way, like, it's the small things management can do to let you do things without, you know, like kind of like, you know, oppressive kind of control over what you're doing, things like that. I think those are things, like, you know, like I often feel like, you know, those are the things that are hard to replicate. You know, like everyone knows you got to have talent, you got to have, like, you know, resort, like, you know, you're not going to find anything if you don't have any money or you don't have people, all of that stuff. But I think it's all these, like, kind of like intangible things that really matter that take a long, long time to develop.
Yeah, you're probably right. But just having that trust in the team, that probably goes a long way, yeah.
It's like a good sports team, right? Like, you can tell when, like, a sports team, like, gels. Like, you know, it's like, you know, like, you look at, like, a soccer team, right? Like, when they press, it's like, you know, the forwards have to do certain things, but then defenders have to do certain things. And, you know, like, and it just seems seamless. When, you know, when it doesn't work, because it looks like, like it just looks all kind of uncoordinated. So I think that's kind of the impression I get often with, like, well-run teams versus, like, not so well-run teams.
It's a good point. I was just thinking about, I live in Missouri, and we have the Kansas City Chiefs is the big football team here, right? And there's like they did 2 years back to back, winning the Super Bowl, and then they didn't, right? And you think about they have people dedicated to spending like millions of dollars on recruitment and, you know, finding the all the right people to bring in. And then sometimes it just falls over, right? And so I guess maybe we shouldn't be so hard on our industry, because we certainly don't spend millions of dollars on recruitment and go to all the colleges like maybe we should to find all the top talent coming out of school. Like, if you think about, you know, in your situation, Aaron, like, you know, they actively recruited you, right? So it's just like, and the same for me as well. Like, I was blown away by how well the recruitment worked, and how I think they got from applying, or like, I can't remember if they reached out, somehow I found the job. And I think it was on site in like a week later, interviewing in Australia. And I was like, what is this? And so maybe I guess we shouldn't be so hard on ourselves that we don't do quite as well, because we don't maybe spend as much dedicated effort to recruiting. And even then, you look at, like, you know, the football teams still fall over and rugby teams still fall over. So maybe it's intangible and impossible, and maybe it's luck. I don't know. I hate to admit things are luck, right? Because I want to make it something that you can make a recipe for, right?
No, it's a good point, and maybe I'm going a bit off topic now, but I think it's only going to get harder going forward, actually. And particularly, I don't know what it's like in the US, but particularly in Australia, a lot of the geology schools are closing. So, you know, where's this talent going to come from? Presumably there's other universities around the world that are going to make some good geologists. But I think it's going to get harder for sure going forward. And what does that mean for exploration? I'm not sure.
It's almost gotten frightening in the US with all the School of Mines are going away. Colorado School of Mines is still that, but I know my alma mater changed their name, and it's almost like in Australia, you guys with the Aussie dollar and the gold price, your gold price has stayed high, versus in the US we had this big lull, and it's almost like we haven't really recovered from it. And so I know, like, a bunch of geos that I went to school with don't work in geology anymore, And so I almost look like we're on like we have a double missing generation, right? Where it's like I'm at the kind of younger end of one missing generation, and then there's one right after me. And you hear all these promises and all these ideas about, you know, like, oh, well, you know, critical minerals and, the green energy revolution is going to be coming, and there's going to be tons of jobs, and we need lots of geologists, and then there's no jobs. And people are desperate to find them. Like, I know tons of people on LinkedIn where they're looking for work, and they're good geos, right? Like, they're really good geos. And the same thing with Australia is some amazing geos are out there looking for work. And just not getting interviews, you know?
Yeah, I think that's maybe a little bit of the where we're at in the investment cycle, right? And, interest rates are high. People are a bit maybe reluctant to move jobs and that sort of thing. And then at the same time, you know, expirations, decreased, I guess, probably over the last couple of years or maybe longer, I'm not sure. There's those jobs, just aren't being advertised at the moment. So, I wonder if that's part of it as well. You know, people sort of saying, okay, what can I do at the end of my degree? And there's nothing. So maybe I won't do that.
Aaron, what would you say you've taken from the Invincible experience and applied to the rest of your career?
Yeah, so a few things. Having the right team, or, you know, having the right people around you. And that's, I guess, going back to sort of what I was saying about working with people that you can learn from and that sort of thing. I think it gives you, like, it motivates you, right? Like, it really, knowing that it's possible. I mean, you see it in the mining news and and that sort of thing, that, you know, there are discoveries being made, and I mean, maybe not so often, but, you know, they're still being made.
It's an interesting point, right? Is when you become part of not the geology is famous or anything like that, but when you become part of a semi-famous discovery, that's kind of wild, right? But it's kind of interesting that almost a bit of celebrity to being involved in something like this. And I don't know, like, I wonder if that sets up an expectation, you know, down the road for people, you know, like where they look at your resume and they go, oh, you know, we want to bring them on. And, you know, they were involved in this. And, you know, because, like, I've got all these books where, like, all these people who were good discoverers made multiple discoveries, right? So there's something that is more likely for someone who's made one discovery, instead of being like the 1 in 1,000 odds, it becomes something like 1 in 10 odds.
Yeah, I'm not too sure, but I guess on the other side of it is, like, outside of the industry, because I always laugh, right? Because, you know, for me and the people that sort of were involved in Invincible, yeah, it is, like, and like you said, it is a big thing, right? But then, you know, I go home and my family couldn't care less.
That's right. They
sort of, okay, yeah.
Sure. Yeah, the great equalizer at home, yeah. And people are like, yeah, so what? Did you take the garbage out?
Exactly.
It's kind of funny because, like, I think the majority of people I know have no idea what geologists do or exploration geologists. I'm always having to explain, you know, even what I do. Or you get the, you know, they think you're a geographer, you know. And it's almost like you're more judged on how many people you manage, right? And it's just like, or how many dollars did you manage? And it's like, that's nothing, you know.
That's right, yeah. That's not the only game that I'm going to be working on, right? So it's interesting.
Yeah, it was funny. I think it just by chance, you know, my sister would call me, and at the time, I think, or maybe 3 or 4 times in a row, I happened to be colouring in some cross sections, and she's like, oh, what are you doing? Oh, just colouring in. And she's like, okay, so that's what you do.
It's like, yeah, you know, my kindergartners are doing the same thing on the table over there.
Yeah,
actually, it's kind of fun because my wife and I would go out mapping together, and I remember we went out to Utah, and the geology was pretty easy to map, but a lot of it was like these vast swaths of a plateau was all the same, you know, unit, and I just like I'm not very artistic, and so I didn't color very well, and my wife would be like, can I color that for you? And she would make these like beautiful maps, and my boss was like, what is this, Scott? This is amazing. And I was like, yes it is. And then I'd have to come clean that it's my wife actually doing it, because, you know, she's a better geologist than I am.
So I did remember what that second thing I'd tell myself was, and I got told when I was leaving St. Ives that the squeaky wheel gets the grease, and I think that's sort of something I took for the runs. Okay, ask more questions, don't be afraid to sort of speak up and that sort of thing, because I think at that time I probably was a little bit quiet, and I sort of just went about my thing.
Often the people that just put their head down and they really work and they produce results, they don't get the same attention, right? And I know we had a number of people on the team who were phenomenal at how they contributed, and they didn't get the same attention, right? Yeah. And it's a difficult thing where I've subsequently worked with some teams that I'm obviously, I talk a lot. It's one of my main faults, but they were actually talking about, you need to listen more. And when there's people that aren't talking, you need to find a way to solicit their opinion, even if it's outside of the meeting. You know, like maybe they're not comfortable saying it in the meeting with all these, you know, 10 people or whatever. And so when you see people that are quiet, go and seek out what they were thinking about. And you'll often find that they had pretty incredible insights. And I wish I'd learned that earlier in my career.
Digging deep where the stories hide, through the hills and the mountains wide. Pickaxe swing and the earth unfolds, chasing dreams in the dirt and gold.
Geology calling under our feet. Secrets are buried in the rock and heat. With a heart full of wonder and a map in hand, exploring the treasures of this great land.